Today's show is sponsored by Public.com. That's where you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. While we can't say for certain it's the highest interest rate there is, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, a higher rate than Betterment, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So, if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty damn up there. This is a paid endorsement for Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosures/high-yield-account.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is special coverage of the Federal Reserve meeting. Let's start with the scores. All-time highs on the S&P 500, positive by 0.8%. On the Nasdaq, up 1%. On the Russell, up 1.6%. In the bond market, a rally through most of that news conference. On a two-year, yields lower by 6 basis points to 4.6193. So let's talk about the why. The why is in the outlook, the projections from the Federal Reserve. Growth revised higher. Unemployment revised down. Inflation revised up. All maintaining the same median dot, implying three cuts in 2024. So there was a clear and obvious contradiction in the outlook and a clear and obvious question to ask in this press conference. What gives? This is what the chairman had to say.
It doesn't mean that. What it means is that, you know, we've seen incoming, as I pointed out in my opening remarks, we did mark up our growth forecast, and so have many other forecasters. So the economy is performing well. And the inflation data came in a little bit higher as a separate matter, and I think that caused people to write up their inflation. But nonetheless, we continue to make good progress on bringing inflation down.
There's two ways to interpret this, the unkind way and the kind way. The unkind way, if you're a Fed basher, you would say he wasn't prepared for that question. The kind way would be to assume that he was, and there was a message, a signal in that non-answer. Bramo, I have to say, I'm in the latter camp and not the former.
I would agree. I actually think that there was a message in this because, honestly, he didn't really push back on financial conditions either and didn't really have any concrete answer. I heard a lot of words. I didn't hear some sort of answer to our financial conditions moving the economy in the wrong direction, which makes me think he's comfortable with it. He's not going to push back. This is a Fed that wants to cut rates. They still want to cut rates. And when he talked about inflation coming down over time, I'll stress the over time.
Yep.
This is higher inflation for a longer period of time that will be tolerated by this Federal Reserve.
Strong growth isn't a problem. Equity markets at all-time highs, not a problem. The Fed chair, I think this is important, how they've set up the perceived asymmetric policy stance of the Federal Reserve in the minds of so many in this market right now. The Fed chair is signaling repeatedly he is more willing to respond to weaker growth than he is stronger growth. So even if you project stronger growth, Bramo, it doesn't matter. He doesn't mean he's going to raise interest rates anytime off the back of that, but weaker growth, they're ready to go.
And you pointed this out. He distinguished the idea of growth that was hotter from inflation as though those stories were independent of one another. And it raises this question, are they still looking at this as a supply side driven kind of issue that caused the inflation, kind of the pandemic effects and the ripple throughs that will naturally subside? Which raises the question, have they really done anything to inflation, or is this just some sort of other type of influence that they're kind of riding and trying to game out?
You know what stood out to me as well? The story hasn't changed. When he says the story hasn't changed, yet the data has, I think the meaning of what he's saying has changed. The meaning is different. If you say the story hasn't changed, even though inflation comes in hotter than expected, you're sending a very different signal to the one that you were sending even a month, 2 months ago.
And you can see that just frankly in the data that they should put out there. Their forecasts exactly are not the same. When they talk about core PCE coming to 2.6% at the end of this year versus the expected 2.4% previously, when you talk about the growth projection increasing materially, this is a shifted kind of landscape with higher inflation and a higher rate for longer. But they're saying the story hasn't changed,
yep.
Which again talks about a green light to stocks, which is exactly what we're seeing.
Let's bring in the guests with equities at all-time highs. We can catch up with Bill Dudley, the former New York Fed president and Bloomberg Economics senior advisor. Bill, the Fed chair said we're committed to getting inflation back to 2%. How committed did he sound in that news conference?
I don't think he's changed the story at all. I think what people are a little bit flummoxed by is the fact that the Fed sees stronger growth, a little bit higher inflation, yet the same number of interest rate cuts penciled in for 2024. I think the reality is it almost flipped. I mean, one more person had moved their interest rate forecast up, it would have been two rate cuts as the median rather than three, and people probably would be interpreting this in a much more different manner. I think, you know, Powell's confident about a couple things. Number one, that inflation is coming down. Number two, that there's that the labor supply is increasing, and that's creating slack in the labor market. And three, that monetary policy is tight. And that's why he's confident that eventually he's going to cut rates. It's just a question of timing.
Bill, do you think that there's something incompatible about shifting upward a growth target, shifting upward a targeted PCE for the end of the year, and even shifting up just slightly where rates are going to be and saying the story hasn't changed, that the inflation target is still the same, it just might take a lot longer?
I think what people, I think, misinterpret is the summary of economic projections is not a Federal Reserve forecast. It's not Powell's forecast. It's a collection of individual forecasts. And the Fed doesn't coordinate the S&P. They're not trying to, you know, go out and ask people to write down certain numbers to tell a certain story. It's just a collection of individual forecasts. And as we see in this case, you know, one dot moves, you'd have a slightly different story. So I think that Powell's basic message is that the underlying story hasn't changed. We didn't completely buy into how good the inflation numbers were in the second half of next year. We're not completely put off by the bad inflation readings in January and February. We still think monetary policy is tight. We still think we're going to get more confident about getting inflation down to 2%. And so we still think we're going to cut rates this year. Timing is uncertain. And he said over and over again, it depends on the data.
But not all dots are created equally. Where do you think Chairman Powell is on this story right now? Because it just seems to me there is a bias to cut interest rates. Steve Ricciuto of Mizuho came on this program in the last week or so, and he said this Federal Reserve wants to cut interest rates. Chairman Powell wants to cut interest rates. Is the bias to cut, regardless of what the data looks like?
I wouldn't go as far as to say the bias is cut no matter what the data looks like. I mean, the Fed's still committed to trying to get inflation down to 2%. But I think what's driving Powell is the fact that he thinks that monetary policy is restrictive. So if you stay at the current setting, the economy will gradually slow, and that will set the stage for less strength in the labor market, which will then motivate cutting interest rates. That's what he's highly confident about. When he got the question today about financial conditions, he showed no concern at all about financial easing and making the economy too strong. I thought that was noteworthy because in the past, he's talked about financial conditions a lot as an important way that monetary policy gets transmitted to the real economy. But this time, he did not take the bait on financial conditions easing. And of course, when he doesn't take the bait on financial conditions easing, what does it do? It causes financial conditions to ease more.
It's a green light to buy stocks. That's exactly what's happening. The S&P 500 at all-time highs and up another 0.8%. Bill, we often hear that we're restrictive. And there are some people that come on the program and push back against that exactly because stocks are at all-time highs, credit spreads are very tight, and unemployment is still below 4%. What do you point to if you were back on the FOMC just to demonstrate more clearly to people as to why this FOMC believes we are sufficiently restrictive?
Well, first of all, the economy does seem like it's slowing. I mean, we grew 4% in the third quarter, 3-something in the fourth quarter. It looks like we're going to get something like 2% in the first quarter. And there are signs of weakness. I mean, if you look at industrial production over the last year, it's actually been down. If you look at hours worked, they've been soft. So I think the Fed is getting enough evidence that the economy is slowing that gives them confidence that monetary policy is actually restrictive. And of course, you know, as loans mature, they get repriced at higher interest rates. And so, you know, as time passes, you stay at the current level of interest rates, that's going to exert more restraint because it's going to drive up financing costs for a lot of smaller businesses and for consumers.
Today's show is sponsored by Public.com. That's where you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. While we can't say for certain it's the highest interest rate there is, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, a higher rate than Betterment, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So, if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty damn up there. This is a paid endorsement for Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosures/high-yield-account.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcasts.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV Plus.
I guess I want to just sit on the whole idea then of financial conditions and the idea that he didn't push back and that's why it's a green light to buy stocks. Is that correct in your view, that this isn't something that's going to move against them in terms of allowing capital markets to really foster a lot faster growth and potentially even more inflation, like we hear from lenders themselves, even to middle market companies, day after day?
I don't think it's a green light to buy stocks because, you know, it could be the wrong decision. Maybe financial conditions are making the economy too strong. Maybe that will keep inflation too high. And in that case, then the Federal Reserve won't cut rates and then financial conditions will tighten. I mean, one reason why financial conditions are as easy as they are is because the market is highly confident that the Fed's going to cut rates, not just in 2024, but also in 2025. You look at the, you know, SOFR futures market, they have rates coming down to about 3.5% over the next couple of years. So it's that prospect of rate cuts that's really providing support to the stock market and to credit spreads. The market basically sees the Fed as having their back. If the economy weakens, the Fed will cut rates. I mean, that's the other thing that came through in his remarks today. If the labor market were to weaken, the Federal Reserve would take that into account in terms of the timing of interest rate cuts. So we don't really have to worry about the economy collapsing because if it starts to weaken significantly, the Federal Reserve will ride to the rescue with rate cuts.
I'm looking right now at Fed Funds futures, and it points to yesterday a 57% chance of a June rate cut. And right now it's something around 68, 69% chance. So increasing the expectation for a rate cut in June, despite the fact that the data didn't give Jay Powell any extra confidence. Some people would look at this and say, OK, maybe they see signs of restrictiveness, although what he pointed to was the quits rate, which is the common sort of thing that people point to as signs of weakness. Other people would say, why the urgency? Is this politically motivated to get going before the election takes off? Because then they could potentially be influenced even more there. Is there something else weighing on the decision-making process that's pushing the Fed to err on the side of being a bit more dovish and allowing this economy to run hot?
Well, I think as he said, as inflation comes down, then the Fed can focus on both sides of their dual mandate, not just the inflation side, but also the growth side. And so I think the Fed more and more is conscious of the fact that they want to do enough to bring inflation down to 2%, but they don't want to overdo it and inadvertently cause a recession. So in some ways, the Fed is trying to have their cake and eat it too, right? They want to ease, but not so soon that they run the risk of easing prematurely.
Just to go through these forecasts, it's a big upward revision to GDP. December projection was 1.4%. New projection is 2.1. Core PCE, it goes up from 2.4 to 2.6. And I just want to get into the details of that with you, Bill. Constant Hunter just wrote in, said, why is the equity market up so much with a basically unchanged dot plot? Because productivity is expected to continue, which will allow stronger growth with little additional inflationary pressure. This scenario is good for risk. Can you talk to us about that, Bill? The relationship between stronger growth and maybe muted inflation that doesn't climb that much off the back of a hot economy. How important is that missing ingredient that has been missing over the previous 10 years, say, that productivity that maybe we're starting to see come back through in a stronger way?
I mean, productivity could be part of it. We don't really know what the productivity trend has been. It was very weak during the pandemic, and it's been very strong over the last year. I think the big thing where the Fed's taking some comfort from is the fact that the labor force growth has picked up dramatically, both because of participation rates among working age population has increased quite a bit, and also immigration. So, you know, the real question is how long is that strong labor force growth going to last? If it lasts all the way through 2024, that allows the economy to grow, you know, more quickly without it generating a tighter labor market. So the growth rate of the labor force is going to be a very, very important factor determining exactly when the Fed can cut rates and at what growth rate.
And Bill, he did mention immigration, and I really that was notable to me because we heard from Morgan Stanley's Ellen Zentner, and we also heard from Jan Hatzius at Goldman Sachs in his reports where he's talking about immigration as one of the big wild cards for why you have seen some of the wage pressure come off and participation go up, and even some of the unemployment data tick a little bit higher just because some of the new migrants to this country are filing for claims. How much is that changing the dynamic in ways that is unappreciated?
Well, I think, you know, what's happened is we had a very sharp restraint on labor supply during the pandemic because we weren't letting anybody into this country except people who were coming over illegally. And then all of a sudden you have a catch up for all those people that wanted to come into the country, you know, in 2020 and 2021, 2022, now coming in 2023. So the real question is that just a temporary period of catch up, or do we have a sustained growth of faster labor force growth? So I think that's a wild card for the outlook, frankly.
Hey, Bill, enjoyed this. Fantastic to catch up with you, sir. Bill Dundy there, the former New York Fed president, reacting to that news conference with Chairman Powell. This afternoon, all-time highs on the S&P 500, up 0.9%, up more than one full percentage point on the Nasdaq right now. The small caps outperforming positive by 2.2% on the Russell 2000. In that news conference, Mike McKee asking a couple of questions. He's back out of that news conference for us now. Mike, your reaction to that one, please.
Well, basically, I think Bill Dudley has it right. The chairman was trying to tell people that the situation hasn't changed, even if the Fed is being more realistic, shall we say, about growth and inflation. Now, the thing he left out is that a significant number of members of the committee did raise their inflation forecasts. And that has some implications down the road in that with only one dot needing to switch, we aren't guaranteed three this year. We could see, if we get another bad inflation report, this easily flip to two dots instead of three dots. But for right now, he's saying, there isn't really a change.
Bill Dudley pointed to the fact that there was no pushback to the financial conditions point. And this was notable because this is the second press conference in a row that people asked about financial conditions easing, and he didn't take the bait. How much signal is there in this that essentially he is not bothered by the fact that we're seeing stocks at all-time highs?
Well, the Fed doesn't really worry about stocks hitting all-time highs except for if there's some sort of bubble that bursts that they have to deal with. They view it as just another way that people are collecting income. Now, it could be a bubble, but they're looking at the cost of doing business. And right now, what we're seeing is the prime rate is unchanged. Mortgage rates have come down, but only a little bit. Credit card rates have actually gone up on average. Companies are still borrowing, and credit spreads have come down, but they're not borrowing as much as they were. So at this point, is it restrictive? Is it not restrictive? Financial conditions reflect what's happening in the stock market and to a lesser extent the bond market, but not necessarily what's happening in the real economy.
Do you get the sense, Mike, that there's a bit of herding cats here? I mean, as Bill was talking about, Bill Dudley, former New York Fed president, that there is a sense it's not a collective view of what's going to happen. It's each Fed member coming out with their projections and him having to cobble together a narrative about that. Is that essentially what we saw, in particular, with the first answer to this question of trying to pull together all of these new pieces?
Yeah, I think the first question was one that any one of us would have asked because it was so obvious. The Fed is raising its inflation forecast, its growth forecast, and not changing the fact that it wants to cut three times. Make sense of that. I'm not sure he completely made sense of it, except for the fact, as Bill Dudley pointed out, that not everybody switched their vote. We needed one more dot to move, and we could have seen that. But they do have a problem with the dot plot in that Wall Street tends to see it as a collective forecast rather than as a collection of 19 individual forecasts. And if you break that down, you do see what I was talking about earlier, that a significant number raised their inflation forecast. And so it probably wouldn't take much to tip us into two if we continue to see this kind of inflation data. It was interesting, though, that he gave us the Fed's core PCE reading, basically 30 basis points for the month of February. We haven't got that yet, but that would suggest that inflation on a PCE basis is not accelerating the same way we saw CPI and PPI did.
Hey, Mike McKee, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Trying to explain what's going on in that news conference. Let's just put it this way. The optics, not great when you look at the medians and the shift we've seen now relative to December.
I do like this explanation that basically it's not this sort of cabal coming up with some thesis that he can then put out there. It's him trying to pull together the different narratives. It is an interesting point that they basically leaked the core PCE. They leaked this core sort of key metric as reason to not be more hawkish and push back against the market.
So Peter Chia had this to say, the median didn't change for 24, but the average changed by 11 basis points. And at 4.81%, it's closer to two cuts than it is to three. That's a kinder way of shaping things up if you wanted to frame things at the Federal Reserve. In fact, that would have might have been a better response for the Fed chairman in the news conference to explain what's going on.
Yeah, on the margins, this does shift people to have slightly less confidence, which is the reason why we're looking to potentially cut rates fewer times. We'll have more time to sift through everything and understand whether we actually are making progress. And then everybody would have said, okay, we've heard absolutely nothing.
The fact of the matter is, he didn't go with that option, though, did he? Remember the different option, excuse it away, focused on other things. And the fact of the matter is, Lisa, we go back to something we've talked about a million times on this program. Will the Fed have the ability to respond to adverse shocks? The answer is yes, based on the communication we've had. Do they see strong growth as a problem per se? The answer is no, based on the communication we've had. So what do? Today, this afternoon, you buy stocks and you buy the front end of the curve because in the minds of Capital Economics this afternoon, based on their note, still on track for a rate cut in June.
Which is really the market's view, too. You're seeing that probability increase. Constance Hunter's point is well taken, that what they're looking at is the hope of productivity and the hope of supply side demand for the labor market to offset some of the growth that would have come with inflation in sort of disinflationary nirvana. We'll see if we get it.
Today's show is sponsored by Public.com. That's where you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. While we can't say for certain it's the highest interest rate there is, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, a higher rate than Betterment, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So, if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty damn up there. This is a paid endorsement for Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosures/high-yield-account.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcasts.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV Plus.
Let's continue this conversation. Jeff Rosenberg at BlackRock is joining us now. Jeff, I just want to know what you've been doing the last hour. Were you running around the trading floor at BlackRock screaming buy stocks? How did you respond to this one?
No, I think the main reaction is what you've been talking about in terms of the two cuts versus the three cuts. I mean, I think that's the headline for the bond market and why you're seeing such a big steepening. And as you point out, you know, it was really much closer to a two-cut scenario, but they didn't go with that at all, and neither did the market narrative. And most of what you got from Chair Powell was kind of dismissive in terms of the uptick in the inflation forecast for 2024. He didn't even mention it in the opening statement. When he got the question on it, it was just a mark-to-market issue. So really trying to kind of hand-wave around the dissonance between stronger growth, higher inflation, and no changes to cuts. But I think that issue is going to be in front of us as we watch the data, you know, play out. They gave the forecast for the inflation. They don't see any changes. But he also said we don't really know. And so I think that'll be a little bit of a longer term issue. But why you're having such a big reaction on the equity side is because the bond market is quite happy with it. And that interchange about the Fed put is back. We'll cut rates if there's any weakness in the employment picture, and risky assets love that story.
But isn't that valid? I mean, at a point where we're talking about the potential to answer some of these questions about why there's been this shift on the margins, could this mean inflation is going to stay around for a bit longer? Maybe it's okay because we want to make sure we stick the soft landing. I mean, those would have been clear answers. Isn't the sort of non-answer signal, as John and I have been talking about, to basically look to that Fed put as a likelihood?
Well, it is, but there's a real problem with that. And the risk is that the Fed has just got the read on their degree of restrictiveness fundamentally wrong. Look at the answer to the question that he gave on, you know, how do you know that you're restrictive? It's all looking at the labor market. How do you know that financial conditions don't matter and you can not look at them? He pointed to the labor market. Well, most of the repair in the labor market has nothing to do with the Fed's policy. It's all supply side. And so when you look at the implications of the Fed's policy and financial conditions. And Mike McKee, you talked about this a little bit. I just want to amplify that it does affect the real economy because the transmission mechanism from financial conditions is through confidence, and confidence translates into demand. And so it's absolutely acting in opposite to what the Fed is intending here. And that's a tension that the Fed is ignoring right now, but they ignore it at their own peril. The market is following the Fed narrative, so everybody's happy with it. But the risk is that they're off, and so that inflation doesn't fall as far as everyone's expecting to, and you end up having to do the opposite of what we got today, which is, actually things are stronger, we can't cut as much as everybody expects, and you get the opposite reaction. That's a risk for the future time, but that's why some of this matters.
So, Jeff, this is refreshing, let's put it that way. Once you've identified an inconsistency like that as a market participant, how do you position accordingly? What do you do? What are you doing differently?
So the thing that it highlights is just the asymmetry in terms of market performance. Now, you're not going to see it realized until it shows up in the data, but it highlights that the Fed's actions and its narrative kind of conspire to push people into the same types of trades. And so when you get the surprise on the other side that might be brewing here. I'm not saying that it is, but it creates a much larger opposite reaction. I don't think you can position for that today because you got a position with the momentum, which is, hey, they're gonna cut three times. They're pretty sanguine, and as you've seen in the equity market today, it's everybody back in the pool.
It seems as though there aren't that many people worried about inflation getting unmoored. Everyone seems to say that doesn't seem to be the risk that we're currently facing. The Fed doesn't seem particularly worried about inflation expectations really getting out of their control. All things being equal, does that give you enough confidence to buy longer term treasuries, 10-year treasuries, 30-year treasuries, with the conviction that the Fed will truly get inflation back down to 2%?
So just a clarification, we're not talking about inflation going back up. We're talking about the failure of inflation to go down to 2% as fast as the Fed expects it to, and therefore they can cut interest rates as fast as they need to because they are more worried about being too restrictive. So it's more about not getting as much as what the market expects than some kind of big change in terms of the inflation trajectory. On the second part of your question, Lisa, super interesting development here, kind of more minor in terms of the headline lines here, but that change to the longer run dot. And what you saw in the curve reaction is an attempt to try to steepen the curve. Most of the reaction is just in the front end, but you look at the back end and it was flirting with higher rates, positive yield movements to the back end. And it is this longer run story that perhaps the landing point isn't as low as what we think it is today, isn't as low as what it was pre-COVID, that the neutral rate ends up being much higher and that the path of aggregate cuts is much lower. And then you add on top of that a lot of the fiscal considerations in terms of the amount of debt that's being pushed into the private side and the QT that he talked about, the balance sheet slowing, less support for absorbing that. that challenges the back end of the curve. So I think it's still a much more challenging environment for longer dated maturity interest rates coming out of this meeting.
You put this all together, Jeff. Do you feel as though this Federal Reserve is tacitly acknowledging that they will tolerate a higher inflation rate for a longer period of time if it's going down, even if very gradually, to that 2% level?
Yeah, you know, I think he got that question explicitly, and he said it explicit as the Fed is going to be within the ambiguity of language. He said over time, he stressed over time, and I think the interpretation of that is they're not going to be so worried about hitting 2% immediately. Now, there's a lot of gap and room for interpretation about what is the difference in calendar dates and time between immediate and over time. But I think it's pretty clear that the Fed is not going to press on economic growth and recession for the benefit of going from 3 to 2%. And I think that's pretty clear where this Fed is leaning.
Hey, Jeff, this was awesome. Really thoughtful stuff. Thank you, sir. Jeff Rosenberg there over at BlackRock. You want two moves in this equity market right now. Stocks, all-time highs. Take another guess at what hit a record high just moments ago. A fresh all-time high. Gold. Not just stocks, but gold as well, Bramo, breaking out and getting back up there.
So there's one way to interpret this, which is potentially fear of inflation, and then you go into gold. Then there's another version of this, which is if interest rates go down, interest-bearing assets are not as attractive, and you can go into a hard asset. So these are two of the potential explanations people might have for gold. Either way, both of them take an effect.
Exactly. So how about both? The fact of the matter is they're still entertaining interest rate cuts, and maybe even inflation isn't going to reaccelerate in a profound way. That's not what Jeff Rosenberg is saying over at BlackRock. Perhaps it hangs around above target, sticky.
Tomorrow, a special from Jonathan Farrow on being a gold bug, the new, the one and only.
I think there's some gold bugs out there who are quite happy with that news conference. 100%. Let's put it that way.
And it's been an incredible rally, and so maybe they've got it just turbocharged.
We'll continue this conversation tomorrow morning. Thank you very much for tuning in to Bloomberg TV and Bloomberg Radio. For our audience worldwide, what a Fed news conference, a green light for so many of you to carry on buying equities. Your stock market at all-time highs. From New York, this is Bloomberg.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.